up?
It's cracking, my dude.
I don't know, but this... How do we end up watching a movie with dude with bosom buddies in it?
Is he the other half of Bosom Buddies?
Yeah, Tom Hanks' other dude.
Yeah. You're like one of like three other people I know who know that show.
Come on, cross-dressing dudes? It's got to be up my alley.
Dude, I remember that theme song and the intro to that show. That show was... I didn't realize what it was at the time, but I liked it. And then it just went away.
Yeah. It was like Perfect Strangers. Cousin Balky Bartakomus.
Even then, I think that one had a longer run than Bosom Buddies.
Yeah. I think Bosom Buddies was like 2 years. That was it.
And that's much longer than I actually remember it going.
But it probably was like 7,000 episodes, because, you know, like back in the day, a season was like a million episodes. Dude, not like our week 10 episodes and call it a day.
I recently ran through the entire series of I Love Lucy, and each of those seasons is about 30 to 35 episodes each.
Ah, see, they put in the work.
And if you think about that, there's 52 weeks in a year. That's a ton of work, dude.
And you're just writing the whole time. That and smoking cigarettes. Writing and smoking.
Hell yeah. Professional cigarette smokers.
Smoke a menthol. It's like eating an apple.
That's gross. Okay, so I always trip out on this small fact. Do you know how many seasons there were of Gilligan's Island?
Oh, fuck. I want to say three. I recently went down like one of these rabbit holes.
It was three.
Yes.
But it seemed like, I don't know, that show was on for 20 fucking years.
Absolutely, man.
There's so many episodes to each of those seasons.
I literally just went down that rabbit hole, like, I want to say yesterday with another show, the same situation. Fuck, what was it? It was one of those stupid, like, just rabbit holes. Batman with fucking Adam West.
Oh, yeah.
Burt Ward. Yeah. How many seasons do you think that was?
Shit. I'm going to say two.
You're damn right. But 120 episodes, bro.
That, like, can't be right.
Well, that's IMDb right, damn
that's,
it.
That seems implausible.
I guess they call it three seasons, but 150 anyways.
If you did an episode a week for a full year, that's 52 episodes. So if it's two seasons, that's 104 episodes.
Bro, that was all slave labor back then. And like, nobody was paid nothing. And they just lived on set and like partied with, ate with, drank with, slept with only the people on set.
Gin and cigarettes.
That was it.
I mean, you've seen some of those episodes, right? Like all the little trippy out fucking, you know, 60s type, there might be on acid type scenes. So for all we know, they could have well been and just been shooting the entire time. And they're like, yeah, just keep cranking them out, dude. Whatever. Like, here, eat this and we'll just let the cameras roll.
I mean, they were making money at the time. I was reading, I think it was the rabbit hole was the Munsters originally. And the Munsters was two seasons and it was destroyed because of Batman, which lasted three seasons.
Shit, dude.
Fucking cutthroat industry, man.
Better times, though. Just hardworking people right there.
You know it. You know, I mean, just imagine the writing. You had to keep cranking out the script, man.
Well, who's putting out 152 episodes in 3 years? You know what I mean? Fucking nobody.
I mean, there's some YouTubers out there handling business. But not at that quality, I would say.
Yeah, like final written, acted, shot, edited, broadcasted.
Yep. Physical comedy, doing the whole nine. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have the digital editing like we do. That was like cut and splice and pacing and gluing and all kinds of shit.
That's true. The editing was like, go to camera two. We have a camera two? Yeah, we just got one. Go to it now.
Yeah, we got a camera too.
Nobody has two televisions. He's lying.
Oh man. So what's up, dude? What you been up to?
Oh, nothing much, man. Enjoying some editing. Hopefully everybody's been getting down on that splicing that I've been throwing into some of these episodes here.
Yeah, man. You're getting the grasp of it for sure.
It's coming. It's coming. Bear with me, folks. I promise you it'll get better. Yeah. Other than that, man, not much. Just being a family man and you know, hanging out with the kiddos.
Speaking of family, man, happy early Father's Day.
Oh yeah.
Salute.
Salute. I don't know if this episode will be out before then, but we will.
That's for sure. I want to say a special happy early Father's Day and what up to Matt. He is out right now counting stars at the moment, so collecting data for us. He'll be back hopefully soon. Also, huge shout out to Dylan over at VHS Doom Podcast. I think I said this before, but he just had his second. Little baby Doom was born on June 1st. 7 Ooh. Pounds, X amount of ounces. He talks about it in the last episode. I think he shot a little like pre-record before the episode because he was editing it and then his wife had the baby. I mean, go listen to the episode. It's dope. It's a double feature. We always love their show anyway. So I'm always going to promote it. So go and check it out. They did a double feature on Body Melt and Slime City. And it was so Ooh. Funny because every time they said Slime City, all I could think was Rack City, but Slime City, you know, Slime City, Slime City, yo. And then like,
you're a fool.
And then Dylan did it. And I was yes! like, yes,
yes. Talk about dialed in.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. That's I fucking love those guys, man. So they're on a kind of like half hiatus because you know, getting new baby time in. So tomorrow I'll be recording an episode with Mikey, his partner, and then Mike the Bearded Villain, which is like their producer of sorts for the show. So we'll be doing an episode tomorrow, and then I think they got some pretty cool stuff planned for me in place of Dylan. I don't want to spoil that yet because you guys should go and listen to their show and follow and subscribe and join their Patreon. And I think there is what are those things called when you go like go to Target and there's people out there sign, you know, want you to sign their shit. If you get enough people to sign it, become, you know,
like a petition.
A petition, yes. Sorry, the tequila is kicking in strong. I'm on my second. Yeah, I think they'd started a petition to get Tubi to sponsor the podcast. And I don't know how that's going. I got to check in with them on that, but I'd sign it.
Yeah, for sure.
So shout out VHS Doom, Dylan, the new dad for the second time. And I know Mikey's got his second on the way too. So
congrats, fellas.
Go and check out their show. Stay up on all the news on the VHS Doom baby stuff. Well, you didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you anyways. I've been out and about doing some stuff. So last weekend, Sean Heights, director of Cannibal Comedian, Thumper's Revenge, he put out a notice on Instagram and was like, hey, I need help shooting a short. If anybody can come out and help, that'd be fantastic. So, of course, I hit him up. I was like, psh, all day, dude. And so I went out and I met him at in Morongo Valley, like a hop, skip, and a jump from Palm Springs. It was hot as balls out there, man. It was like 103, maybe.
That's nothing.
Well, yeah, says the Vegas.
That was like lower. 8 o'clock this morning.
Ugh, fuck that shit. No thanks. But I drove out there and hung out on set with Sean, and he was shooting a short called Bellevue Bob, which is a character played by David, but he goes by Lucifer's Axe on Instagram. He is Miss Sadistic's partner, and both of them were in Sean's early movie, Mangrove Slasher 2, and then Big Top Evil, which is I watched Big Top Evil before we interviewed him on Cannibal Comedian, and it was cool to see them in all three of those movies. But in Big Top Evil, David plays a character named Bellevue Bob, and so the short is amongst a series of shorts that kind of tell the backstories of some of those characters, and in particular for this one, Bellevue Bob. So
it was sweet.
Yeah, dude, it was cool to see him all made up in his makeup and shit. I took a ton of photos. Sean had asked me to do some BTS stuff. I got an interview with David, but I wanted to do more interviews with other people, but we were just go all night. I think I got there at noon and I left close to midnight, so it was a 12-hour day.
Oof.
And Sean and them had been there since like 9, I think, so they were there all fucking day. But it was cool. Got to hang out, do the behind the scenes stuff, you know, get to help out on set, see how the sausage is made, if you know what I mean.
It's not as pretty behind the
scenes.
It's
not. It's a lot of standing around and waiting, which thankfully for my time in the Army, I'm kind of used to that, because the Army's motto was, and if not is still, hurry up and wait. So totally fine. But here's the trip out part. So I've been talking to an editor. He is a special effects artist. His name is Oliver Poser. And I've been talking to him on Instagram for a long time. And he and I were talking, man, when we first met almost like a year ago, about a movie called Alien Planet. It was pretty cool. It was straight up sci-fi, but his makeup and special effects was fucking top notch, right? So praising him the whole time. We talked a little bit and that was about it. Then he hits me up about 2 weeks ago and he's like, hey, I got this project that I'm going to be working on. It's called The Shed. Him and his one of his buddies are going to be making it. It's a micro budget film. The dude he's making it with is, I want to say, Academy Award winning writer, if not like an Emmy winning writer. He's acclaimed for sure. I don't remember the specifics.
Got some clout to him.
100%. And I guess he always wanted to get into screenwriting and like directing. And I don't know. He's just, I guess, never really find it to kind of pop off for himself. So Oliver's like, hey, well, you know, I can do this and that, and you've got a story, and, you know, let's put it together. So he hit me up and he was like, hey, would you guys mind, you know, promoting it, talking about it? You know, I offered if I wanted to come on the show. And he was like, yeah, totally, let's do it. So I was like, great. Yeah, well, you know, we were supposed to record last Thursday. I said, let me meet with the guys, I'll talk about it, and we'll get it going. And then we didn't have a chance to meet, and then so we didn't talk about it. And then I got the casting call from Sean. Yeah, whatever they call it, the call sheet. And I'm looking at everyone who's going to be there. And sure enough, Oliver Poser's on there.
Nice. With a fat
note that says all props and effects and makeup needs to be brought to Oliver. And I was like, that's definitely him. And then he had a role in the movie and everything. So immediately I hit him up. I was like, hey, you working with Sean this weekend? He's like, yeah. And I was like, sweet, me too, bro. He's like, oh shit, so we get to meet? I was like, yeah, man. He's like, that's gonna be awesome. So we linked up while we were there. We exchanged contact info and got some more deets on the project, and I took a ton of pictures of him. He played a cop in that thing and sent him all those. So I still gotta post all that shit. I posted some other stuff, but if you follow us on Instagram, you've probably already seen it. If you don't follow us on Instagram, please go follow us on Instagram at Mutant City Horror. We are nearing 1,000 followers. That's going to be legit. I did want to do like a giveaway, but we're already so close. It's like 980 or something. It just let it naturally happen. We'll just shout out whoever the 1K follower is.
Ow!
So yeah, man. And then lastly, been talking with Dirty Freakin' Joe, and he threw something my way. You and I have talked about that already. I'm not ready to share all that because I don't know how it's going to unfold. So just to say that some cool things might come from Dirty Freakin' Joe.
Nice.
I mean, all good things come from Dirty Freakin' Joe. So there you go.
And dirty things.
Well, cool. I feel like we're caught up. Good episode, man. Talk to you next week.
As if, bro. We got a fucking classic here. We need to go ahead and like let these people know. Well, I wouldn't call it a classic, but it's a little gem.
You know, I didn't really know what it was. And like, it's just one of those ones that always like pops up on Prime. It's like, hey, if you liked what you just watched, you might like this one. And sometimes, I don't know, I feel like that hits like 50-50. Sometimes it hits and sometimes it flops. And this one, I feel, is just kind of middle of the road. It wasn't, I was hoping for like more like guts and blood and like crazy special effects. And you get that in this, but not to the level that I was expecting.
Yeah.
So I still enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, let's get to it. So what are we watching?
Well, in honor of Matt, I'll get it started. See if I can do it right. I never get it fucking right off the first time.
That you say that, but then you've done it the first time in the last three shows. I think
that's just the magic of your editing. All right. So tonight, the monsters are running amok, and we run towards that theater where the marquee now reads Tix.
They came from the city.
This is it! This place looks worse than the project.
It's too goddamn quiet.
To enjoy a different kind of wildlife.
Sometimes I get the feeling like something really bad is gonna happen.
But life in the wilderness,
there's something on your back,
is getting under their skin.
Just don't touch it if you don't know what it is. Don't touch it, it attacked me.
Something drained your dog of all his blood.
It's a tick.
Ticks do not get this big.
They'll be all over this place like flies.
Infested. They breed. They hatch. They kill.
The 1993 horror movie. Directed by one
Tony Randall. Dude, you know who Tony Randall is.
Do I though?
I mean, you know his work.
Give me some examples.
Hellraiser 2, Hellbound.
You know, did he direct it?
He was the editor.
Dude, I got mad respect for editors, dude. I mean, right? You would know why, right?
Obviously, yeah. It's a pain in the fucking ass. Okay, let me take a look here, actually. He may have actually done a little bit more than just been the editor on that bad boy.
Well, for both, it says Hellraiser 1 and Hellraiser 2, which I feel like a lot of people like Hellraiser 2 better than Hellraiser, like the original one.
I do too. I guess it's because of the one fucked up scene of him on the bed with the straight razor, man. Like, that scene gets me.
So I used to hold that position. And then I went back recently. Ooh, I don't know. A couple of years ago, maybe right at around, I think it was right around when we met Doug Bradley. And I had a different respect for the first one.
Word.
I really enjoy that shit.
You know what I enjoy is going back and watching them with this lens.
Yeah.
And being able to like say, oh, okay, now I really see the magic inside of whatever it is.
You know where that resonates the most is with music. I can't tell you how many times I like, even now as an adult, I'll go back and listen to like bands or even genres where when I was, you know, 30 years ago, I was like, dude, fuck that noise. I just want party music, you know? So I didn't respect that level of music.
Nobody would back bumping down the street.
Seriously. Like I found myself like Sundays, I have a tendency to play a lot of Carole King on Sundays. Just because, I don't know, it feels like a good Sunday, like coffee, chill vibe. Mm-hmm. But you would have never, never caught me listening to Carole King when I was like 16, you know?
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. We do a lot of oldies breakfast. Same oldies that I listened to growing up. Not like what they were going to call my music growing up as oldies.
Yeah. Okay, the whole point of that is that I feel the same way about a lot of movies. And so I think this is maybe one of them where, like, I don't know, just flew under my radar or I wasn't interested in a movie about ticks, you know?
No, it's easy that this didn't fly necessarily under the radar. This was a straight-to-video release, so there was no theatrical release here. So unless you looked at it in the video store, you weren't gonna like have any like inkling to grab it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, so like I wouldn't beat yourself up on that one.
I'll give myself a pass. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Because like even I was like, wait a minute here, like this is pretty low budget, and like around that time, 93, I mean, Pulp Fiction's a big release, so you got that like theatrical budget, and this, they just didn't have that backing here. So then I saw that it was a straight to video, and I was like, oh, okay, that makes a little
nice.
Yeah,
you know, one thing, I didn't look very hard, but I did look, and the one thing I didn't really see was filming locations. I do know some of it was shot in San Bernardino, up in Big Bear specifically, so that's right in our stomping ground, you know what I mean?
Yeah, all of it pretty much was.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the liquor store, or like the little gas station or whatever that they stop at to supply up. And I was like, I'm almost certain I've either stopped there before, or this has been in like a ton of different movies, because it's always that same like on the side of the road mountain type store, and it's usually always the same place.
Yeah, we probably stopped there on my way to my sister's wedding or something.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So
happy,
give us
the anniversary, sis.
All right. Give us a synopsis on Ticks.
Basic synopsis is, it's a group of troubled teens from LA inner city go on this like wilderness project. And while they're out on this wilderness project, they encounter some type of a mutation that is starting to wreak havoc.
Pretty much. Yeah. All right. Good one, dude. Way to keep it like, you know, subtle. Keep them hanging on for more.
Man, I'm trying to take tips. Matt has pulled me aside.
Nice.
He sets a good standard.
Okay. So a couple notable faces in this one, in addition to Peter Scolari, who is the other half of the Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks, as we mentioned earlier. Which also, it made me look him up, because he sounded like he did the voiceover for Stand By Me.
No, wasn't that Richard Dreyfuss?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it sounded like him.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Peter Scolari from Bosom Buddies, which I'm guaranteeing almost nobody listening to this will know what that is. But it's also got a couple of the Howard brothers, Clint and Rance Howard.
Whoa, those aren't brothers.
They're not brothers?
That's father and son.
Oh, shit.
Yes, sir. That is the poppy of the brothers.
Get out of here.
Clint Howard and...
Rance and Ron.
Ron Howard, right.
Yeah, and it's funny. That makes sense, because I'm thinking to myself, there's Ron... and there's Clint. Those are easy fucking names. But what kind of name is Rance? That doesn't fit the naming scheme of, like, why would their parents go, it's like Bob, Jeff, and Geraldo. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like completely the opposite way. But it's because he's not one of the kids. He's Papa Howard.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because Jenny and I were just watched that documentary, Bratz. And she's like, why is Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen? Like, it is pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. So you get it. And if there's anything I have to say negative about this movie, is that there was not enough Clint Howard in it. But
we'll, oh, for sure,
we'll get there. But then you've got Seth Green, and I'm going to call him like mid-puberty Seth Green, because I feel like he's not as like squeaky voiced as when he was younger, but he still hasn't hit like his older, like regular, you know, post adolescence voice. It's just kind of like right in the middle.
True that. True that.
So then my favorite of all of this, I remember watching the credits and I was like, get the fuck out of here. Alfonso Ribeiro's in it. Who, for anybody at home who doesn't know, it's fucking Carlton from the original Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. That's awesome. I don't think I've ever seen him in any movie. I only just know him from two things.
Silver Spoons?
Ooh, no. Never seen it.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Anyways, I'm older.
By like 2 years. No.
I'm going to play that card.
I know him from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and from the mail-ordered Learn How to Breakdance infomercial.
Telmac presents Alfonso Ribeiro.
Hi. You know, I wasn't born a dancer. I learned to do it with a lot of help. And with my help, you can learn too. Moves like the moonwalk or the king tut. It's all right here in the Breaking and Popping book. Almost 100 pages that simply and clearly take you through the moves. In a few minutes, you could be doing backspins that will flip out your friends, or eye-popping moves like the centipede. My step-by-step guide starts with the basics, but takes you all the way to tough moves like the windmill. It's all right here in my easy-to-follow book. And tell mom and dad, it's the safe way to break and pop, not the things you shouldn't try.
So, you get the point.
Quality.
Oh, shit. So, okay, so I was like just giddy at the fact that I was going to see him in something other than Fresh Prince, and he did not disappoint, man.
Oh, dude, he is like the worst bad guy ever. Why is he cast in the bad guy role to begin with? I don't get it.
So, as you mentioned, the movie is about the group of troubled kids who get picked up, inner city youths, I'll call them, and they're going on like a nature retreat to like try to like balance them or fix them, or I don't know what the fuck. To be honest, I was never really clear about what they were doing up there. So Seth Green, it opens up with Seth Green and pulling up in a tow truck with his dad, and his dad's like, well, get out, you know, pretty much. And he's like, oh, I don't want to go. And he's like, look, I don't know how to fix you. So they know how to fix you. So get out. And then like immediately he starts having these like panic attack flashbacks, and like it does that thing with the camera where it's like moving.
He's hallucinating.
Yeah. To make it seem like he's getting dizzy or he's tripping, right?
Or panic attack or something.
And we instantly for me, I was like, oh, he has like separation anxiety. He has daddy issues. Like those are all the things that the dad couldn't fix. Maybe that's fixed with you spending time with your kid. But instead he was like, get the fuck out, man. I got cars to haul, you know?
Is that why he's like firmly gripping on to the basketball posts like in the next team?
Well, yeah.
daddy issues.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I'll circle back to that in a minute. But so whatever, he's making his way through this playground. It's like the LA River, right? That famous bridge where fucking they shot Grease and like
Blood In, Blood Out,
Terminator 2, like everybody fucking shoots down there. And he's walking through and he comes across this like ghetto hood kid, right? Who's in like a long trench coat, backwards hat, wearing these
MC
like
Hammer pants.
Yeah, man. And the parachute pants. And he's got a dog with him, and he's got these real blacked out dark shades. And like, you could tell this dude is trouble, and it's fucking Carlton, man.
We're going to play a game, homie. Here's the deal. You sing a gimme, you live. You brick, you don't. See, they call me Panic because I never do. How about you?
Doesn't he even have like the gloves with no fingertips and like,
yeah, dude. Oh,
the Tron shades.
He was calling Seth Green Holmes and he was threatening to kill him. And like, he reminded me of Taye Diggs and Anthony Anderson from Malibu's Most Wanted. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they have to learn how to be ghetto. They're like learned Juilliard trained actors. And they have no idea how to quote unquote be ghetto, you know?
Yes.
And there's that whole scene where Taye Diggs is like trying to like get all hard with the gun. He's like, you know, pushing the guns together. And he's like, break yourself, fool, and calling him a bitch. That is what Carlton was like for me in this movie. Like you are just too non-ghetto to be this ghetto person.
There's a point where he points to his dog, which is like a border collie, and he's like, I'm gonna sick my dog on you to kill you. And it's like this is not a like some Rottweiler trained beast that'd be afraid of. It's like a one blue-eyed like border collie chilling off to the side.
He kept calling everybody sucker, and I don't know, just like that's all I could hear from him was like, you, I know he wants to say sucker, but like I hear the ER at the end, it's like sucker, like he can't really fully commit, you know? It's like that whole thing where like in TV shows or, you know, when like the alpha males have to tell somebody that they love their girl or whatever, and they're like, I love, you know, like they just can't fully get it out. That's how his ghetto-ness was. Like he just couldn't get it out, dude.
He's like, I don't think you understand. I was in Silver Spoons with Ricky Schroeder. We rode around on a train inside the house.
Hey, if you say so, man.
Anyways, you know, Bosom Buddies, though.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. So this van pulls up, and it's this guy and this girl. Well, I should say a man and a woman. And so this is where we first meet Peter Scolari, plays Charles Danson, and then we also meet Holly Lambert, played by Rosalind Allen.
Hi. Must be Tyler Burns.
Yeah.
I'm Holly Lambert. I'm the director of the Wilderness Project. I'm glad you could make it.
And they're like the youth counselors, I guess, but they're also banging.
I'm sure you're going to have some fun.
And they don't say it right away, but you kind of get the impression. Hi. Nice to and then... Charles's daughter, I think daughter. Melissa, right?
Melissa.
Yeah.
Be okay. Us played by Virginia Kenny? Keeney? Kenichiwa.
Anyways, good job, Virginia.
Oh, yeah. With the Y. Okay, so his daughter pops out. She starts talking shit about the whole thing. So there's her, there's Seth Green, there's Carlton, and then there's the counselors. And then we get our last two youths. And that is, what the fuck were their names? Dee Dee was the blonde, girl. Right? Dee Dee was the blonde. So Dee Dee was the spoiled rich girl, hot blonde type. And then her degenerate, ambiguously Hispanic partner was Rome Hernandez, played by Ray Oreo. And it was funny because he pulls up and he was talking shit about like her rich dad, like he's trying to get like a Mercedes out of him. And he's like, oh, I'll buy you one. I mean, you know the line, you came in saying it. What was it?
See how much this thing cost?
Daddy said the IRS paid for it.
Since it was so cheap, I asked her old man to buy me one too. Only if you drive to Mexico, he says, and stay there. Do I look Mexican to you?
And everybody was like, yeah.
It was like ambiguous. They're like, I don't know. Are you like, what was that movie where like Super Troopers.
Chinchillas?
Yes.
They think I'm Mexican. Okay. So all of the U's pack in, they pack it up, pack it in, and then they begin on their journey to the woods. And in the meantime, we see what's happening in the woods. And that is somebody is growing a lot of marijuana out in the fields.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then there's around the
mass operation going on.
Yeah, dude. Which for San Bernardino is not too far fetched.
No, not even close. Like, I know that there is a bunch of farms out there in the hills, and then our hills back in the day.
You're like, I know where that one's at. I've been to that one.
I believe this is the Pacific West Slope.
That's old Jim's house right there. Well, okay, so this is where we see that Clint Howard is running a grow house, right, up in the hills. And he's, you know, we see him, like, treating all the plants and everything. And, you know, there's a radio playing about how, like, you know, displaced veterans are kind of turning to cash crops and, you know, trying to earn some money there, and he's doing whatever he is to treat the plants. And we notice that some of this like magic solution that he conjured up ends up like falling or spilling onto like a nest of ticks. I don't think you know exactly what it is in the moment, but you're watching a movie called Ticks. Like, what else is it going to be? You know what I mean?
It really looked like, you know, when a snake sheds its skin, like if they shed the skin of their head all at once and it was laying there, like that could have been this little tick nest. But yeah, it drips all over it.
And you know what happens when that happens?
Good times.
Nothing good. Yeah. So we cut back. We stop at this fucking world famous rest stop in the mountains that I don't remember where it's at or what it's called. And everybody gets down. Now I gotta say,
may or may not have bought a tall can at once.
Right? Yeah, for sure. I have to say that Carlton's character's name in this movie is, his name is Panic. And his name is Panic because
he don't panic.
He don't. Which I was like, I see what you were going for there.
It's even more Tron.
But yeah, exactly. So there's a part of me that makes me wonder if like he came to the director and was like, what if my character's name was Panic?
I got this dope name, bro. Like, I'm telling you, this is the end all be all. I'm gonna put on my hammer pants. I'm gonna put on my like long trench coat, backwards hat, and you're gonna call me
Panic because I never do. How about you?
That makes me wonder if now he punked his way onto the movie. Like maybe he is actually like super hood, good, super thug. And I was like, I'm gonna be in this movie. You gonna have me in this movie.
What's interesting is this movie was done at the peak of the success of Fresh Prince. It's not like this was a precursor to, or like he did this after and struggling to find another role. Like he probably had the option to take this role and was like, oh yeah, this is gonna be the next phase right here.
Which is weird to me because, is it though? Like, who are you working with? You know what I mean? Like Seth Green and Peter Scolari and Ron Howard's brother and dad. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not discrediting them, but I also mean, at the same time, I don't feel like they have enough clout to be like, yeah, I'm going to not do Fresh Prince for a minute and I'm going to go rock this movie. But then again, maybe it was just his way of thinking he can break into shit like that.
Yeah. Or maybe he was just trying to get with one of the chicks on set.
It was the vet. It was the veterinarian. The older lady.
It was, wasn't
she
it?
She had that hot, like,
we should get him on the show and
middle
ask.
Middle to late age, like, yeah.
Come on, tell me. We won't tell nobody.
Okay, so, spoiler alert. I think Panic's name is ironic because that's all he does throughout the movie. Is Panic. He may not be like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But like in every scenario, he's like, oh, hell no, I'm not doing that. Right.
And worst case scenario.
The first time we see that is when they pull up to this rest stop and they're like, hey, you want to get out? And he gets out and he looks around. Nothing but white people out there and all bikers and shit. And he's like, nope.
Right back in.
He's like, nope, not doing that. He's going to stay right here. Right. So a little bit of panic, but okay, I'll give it to you. And then we're inside and we see that there's all these postings that, you know, there's be careful, you know, marijuana's the devil's kids, the kids devil's play. I don't know what the sign said. It was something fucking dumb that like, you know, one of those, it's a gateway drug or whatever.
Yeah. Smoke weed. You're going to die.
Yeah, basically.
But around that same time was, there is a scene where the tick is on the dog and Seth Green like pulls the tick off the dog and makes this whole comment about like, there's only one way to kill him. You can't crush him. You got to burn him. And lights it up on fire right there. Poof.
It's a tick. Vampires of the insect world.
Oh, that sucker's nasty.
Got a match or something?
Yeah, hold on.
My grandfather told me this. They're too tough to squash.
Oh. I thought that was like when they first got to the woods, but you might be right. Maybe it was before that. But this inside the store, the daughter is reading the flyer. And then she's got some fucking creeper dude coming up right behind her. Drinking a tall can in a brown paper bag, like gentlemen. Like gentlemen should drink tall cans. Mm-hmm. And he starts like playing with her hair and he's like totally fucking creeping out on her. And some other guy comes up behind him, like telling him to mind his manners and shit. And they call him Sir. And I was like, that's a weird fucking name. The Assassin of Youth. That's what it said. Marijuana.
Yeah, marijuana.
Spelled with an H. The Assassin of Youth. Yeah. So these dudes are just creeping the fuck out of her. You know, she, you know, as they do, they get in the car, they take off.
While they're in the store, also Bad Boy Panic was in the back, like ruffling through everyone's bags and shit.
Ah, jackpot.
What's that? See that Cholo's guns? She's trying to buff up for his honey, right? Steroids.
What are you gonna do?
She ain't a wealth, man.
You're a thief too?
Oh, that's right. They were Rome's.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right.
Because Rome's got a fucking 85 pack. Like, that motherfucker's so cut.
Okay. So now after they leave, we cut back to Ron Howard, and he ends up getting attacked by some of these ticks in his barn, which I thought was funny because he was like setting, he had like bear traps around his place.
Yeah.
And he ended up like, I think what happened was, he heard his hamster squeal, and then he went over to go check. The hamster was fucking just like all eaten up, and it was from one of these overgrown fucking ticks. You're all messed up. And so while he's trying to figure it out, he's freaking out. He steps backwards into the bear trap, falls over, he's stuck, and he's laying on the ground. And what he sees up at the top of the ceiling is all these big fucking just like, I don't know, what would you even call it? Like a nest?
Like an egg sack. Like it just... Oh, it's gross. It's extra oozy, drippy.
That's what makes it dope, dude. When
it looks like a bunch of mocha, like a bunch of boogers just hanging out on the ceiling. Like, extra,
yeah,
gross.
Or like that phlegm you just like caught, like when you have like a bad cough and you just like,
oh, and it comes out in a chunk. Yeah, that's about right.
Or like in two pieces where you're like, oh, I thought I got all of it, and then there's more, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, and it like rips from the back of your nose out too. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, those deep ones.
Just the tiniest salty, you know, like you could taste
a little
it.
Bit of blood. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I remember when talking with Joe Castro, he was like, the secret is to keep it wet. Like keep it, you know, looking kind of gross. And that's exactly what happened here. These egg sacs just look so fucking oozy, as you call it. And they're falling on him, and he's starting to get attacked by these ticks. So you know shit's gonna be going down in there.
Oh yeah, they're on the
and loose. I gotta say, like, you know, we don't get like a great look at the ticks in here at this time, but throughout the movie you do, and you know, the practicals with the, you know, the guts and the blood and all that, and these ticks were done really well too. Like you see them moving around on the floor and shit, and
mm-hmm. Look like dope. Remote controls, and they didn't go over the top, and in fact we'll talk about like how these ticks attack and stuff that I thought kind of played well into the way that it was done.
Yeah. Well, the youth bus gets to the cabin, they get to where they're going, and they're starting to get settled in, and you know, they're trying to put all their shit away in the closets and stuff. And this is where Seth Green's character starts to, you know, he goes to the closet to go put some shit away, and he finds one of these egg sacs just like hanging up on the wall surrounded by cobwebs. He starts poking at it with a stick and it just starts fucking pouring. It looks like blood, darker than blood, you know, almost like a blackish, darkish green, which I thought was a pretty dope color. And then like the larvae or the larvae or whatever you want to call it starts like popping out too. So it's him, Rome, and Panic, and they're all just like tripping out on whatever this thing is. And I thought it was so funny that none of them had the wherewithal to be like, I should probably tell somebody about this and or at least clean it up. And they just fucking left it there, dude.
Again, like just proof that like the older generation's just more badass. Like, yeah, whatever. Close the door.
It's fun. That's funny. I took a different take on it. I was like, man, fucking lazy teenagers are always lazy teenagers, man.
Doesn't, yeah, that's true.
Things don't fucking change.
Troubled youth for a reason. Fucking clean up your damn shit.
So we start to get kind of a better idea of what's happening here, right? So as the ooze is like dripping through the floorboard, we see like the camera kind of like following it down and over and panning. And we start to see that there's more in the house, right? Giving us an idea of what's to come. And then we just have this, like, I won't call it, a montage. I need a montage. Montage.
Oh. You're right.
But we get this, like, voiceover, which is the scene that made me feel like Peter Scolari was Richard Dreyfuss, because he sounds just fucking like him, dude.
Because he's up in the window, like, basically chronicling. Yeah, and I was like, where is this voice coming from? It's okay. I kind of guess I went down that same path too for a second.
I recognized it right away, dude. Like the first scene with him, I was like, is that the guy? But no, so yeah, he's just kind of, you know, monologuing for us in a little bit about panic and all of the individual kids, right? They're all there to do some like healing or whatever. Again,
he's like the counselor, right? Like he's the lead guy, so he's kind of chronicling what's going on.
Yeah, I guess the intent is to like bring him up and like, I don't know, have a
talking
session. Yeah. I don't know. I'm glad they didn't like hyper fixate on that shit, because they just kind of get right to it, right? Because so after he's done kind of talking about all the kids, the daughter and Seth Green are walking around, and you know, she's talking all the shit about her. That's her dad, and like I think that's like his girlfriend or whatever. You could tell she's like she feels a certain kind of way about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stops her and he's like, hey, hold on, like there's something on your shirt. And she takes it as like, oh yeah, whatever, like you're, you know, aka like you're just trying to get me naked out here in these woods. There's something. But he's like, no, seriously. And he like picks up a stick and he's like, turn around. And there's a big fucking sack on the back of her shirt. And I'm like, how in the fuck do you not feel that, dude? At least the weight of that thing attaching itself to you. Come on.
I mean, they explain it's because it squirts that like lidocaine LSD into you. So like you don't feel it. But that's part of the charm.
Yeah, but even then, like it wasn't attached
it's like
to her.
15 pounds on your back.
Seriously, dude.
Like the thing is beastly.
Not you, Siri. Calm down. So they end up killing it and they get freaked the fuck out and they run back over to the camp and immediately they're like,
you would not believe it.
What happened to you two?
Well, Melissa got attacked by some big bug or something. Can we go home?
And I was like,
see, I should have brought a piece, man. This place ain't safe.
That's a youth move right there for sure.
Right.
Like whatever the smallest little like inconvenience. I lost my AirPod. Can we go home? It's like, no, dude, calm down. We're staying.
You know what I just thought of? I bet Matt worked in this area.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Because he was a camp counselor for a long time up in that area, too.
Right. Maybe not during this time, but during that area. Anyways.
So, camp counselor is like, nope, sorry, we staying. They're trying to make a case, but, you know, it's youth against authority, and it's not going their way, and they're just squabbling until some dudes roll up. And it's Jerry and Sir, the two dudes from the store from the beginning. And I don't understand their vibes, because Jerry's like a total backwoods, like he was the dude drinking the tall can in the brown paper bag. And then Sir is like pseudo sophisticated, somewhat like French speaking, like
I got that, like, Sir is, like, the guy who's got a little bit of money, a little bit of power, and, like...
This is my associate, Jerry.
Jerry's his lackey. Like, you know, hang out with me, I'll take care of you, but you do what I tell you to do when I tell you to do it.
So, do you even remember why they showed up?
Thank you, but not yet.
They showed up...
To offer a friendly word of advice. Well, since they closed down the logging mill, some of the locals have taken to, well, illicit means of getting by.
What does that mean?
Beware the cash croppers.
Heard and saw the kids all like playing and hanging out like in the for a picnic. And so they stopped by because they were making some noise, and quickly the counselor's like, sorry, we're just out here, you know, eating lunch, having a little good time. Sir's like, oh, don't worry, I'm not trying to spoil your good time or anything. Basically, they're keeping an eye on their crops. They don't want the kids or anybody getting too close to their crops.
It took our land. Don't worry about out. Yeah. Yeah, they just show up really to just kind of make sure they know that they're there. You know what right. I mean?
Thanks for stopping by.
Don't just kind of display presence. But they're also like warning them too about, you know, hey, be careful. There's crazy people out here, dangerous people, you know, cash croppers. And they're like, oh, like what? You know,
like us.
Yeah, basically.
That's all I got they're from like, it.
Oh, they're growing dope out here. And Peter Scolari's character is like, what kind of dope? And they just start laughing at him. They're like, marijuana. It's like, oh. But it seemed like Peter Scolari and the other girl, the other lady, the other counselor were like, oh, it's just marijuana? Like, that's cool. I'm not worried about that.
We got real issues in the inner city. You ever suck dick for marijuana?
Huh? I seen it. So they leave. We cut back to Clint Howard. And he's like waking up. He's coming to. And what we find is like he's got like some growth on him, or at least that's what it looks like, right? Something's like bothering the shit out of him. And he wakes up and he panics and he goes over and he grabs his gun. It's a little, you know, fucking pistol, six shooter or whatever. And like he just like shoots his leg, right? You don't see what's bothering him.
Take care of the problem.
That's the easiest way to do it is just I'm going to nervously point this gun at my leg and whatever is on it and just shoot it. And that's going to fix all my problems.
I mean, it could. You won't know unless you try, apparently.
True that. So while he's dealing with that, we see the kids back at the camp. They go to make a campfire using nothing but straight gasoline. And then Peter Scolari has to fucking run out from boning the homegirl. And he's talking shit to the kids. And he's like, you can't do that. It's forest fire country. Goddamn. Come on, guys, you can't be. And they're like, what are we thinking? And blah, blah, blah. And Carlton's like,
chill out, Chuck. Nobody ever taught us how to make a campfire. I mean, what do you want from us?
I was like, well played, sir. Well played.
He's like, oh. Yeah, right for the heartstrings.
Yeah, and he's like, all right.
So he's like, all right, put it out. Okay, and we'll do it tomorrow. I'll teach you how to make a fire tomorrow.
But he was literally like, but not tonight because I'm busy inside.
And they all called him out on it.
Well, his daughter called him out. Busy doing what? Screwing Angela or whatever the fuck her name was. And I was like, yeah. What he meant to say was he was getting busy. Not that he was busy. He was busy getting busy. There it is. There. Holly. Holly's her name. So in the meantime, you know, the kids go back to doing what they were doing. And Panic's dog, Carlton's dog, ends up like running off, right? Because it saw something in the bushes.
Yeah, we get some of that Evil Dead, like, spirit chasing something. Vision.
Now, immediately, I thought about the Evil Deaths podcast. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Because when we watched, I never remember the name of that fucking movie, man.
The Kindred?
The Kindred, yes.
That's the reason why nobody else has seen that shit. It's because nobody remembers the fucking name.
This tequila's not helping.
Facts.
I was like, oh, shit.
I've given you shit and you've taken
it. Is it going to happen? Right? Because they talked about not feeling comfortable watching dogs die in
movies.
Yeah,
fucker. I was like, this is like the sixth movie in a row. I am so pissed. Like, as I'm watching this at like 1 a.m, everybody's asleep. All of a sudden, this dog dies, and I'm like, motherfucker, another goddamn dog death.
I didn't realize how often dogs die until they fucking pointed it out.
Oh my God. This is like the sixth movie, I swear. So not on purpose, everyone. Not on purpose.
Shout out to Josh and Brett with the Evil Deaths podcast, another one of our favorite podcasts. So if you don't listen to them, subscribe to them, follow them, check them out. They have a fucking rad show. But they were the ones who pointed out the fact that, you know, there's a lot of dog deaths in horror movies. And it seems like we can't escape it ever since talking to those guys.
Gosh, they cursed us, man. Freaking cursed us.
It is what it is. But this leads up to one of my favorite scenes, at least up to this point. They go looking for the dog, And when they come up on it, the dog is fucking laying on the ground with something that looks like it cut into its belly, and it's like convulsing. And I thought it was pretty dope to see like the dog in that way doing that. And then it ends up dying, and they go to bring it back to the camp to like show the counselors what's happening. But Carlton is like going off in the cabin. He's super fucking
panicking.
Pissed. Yes, right? Again, another scenario in which, and which is funny too, because when those rednecks rolled up on him while they were, you know, at the picnic or whatever, he kept saying, "I should have brought a piece. I knew I should have brought a piece." And I was like,
with this switchblade.
Yeah. Okay. So he's in the cabin with Seth Green, and he's talking all kinds of shit about how, like, I knew I shouldn't have come up here. This place isn't for me. Like, I totally not felt right. So the whole time we've been here, I had bad vibes, blah, blah, blah. And Seth Green is, you know, he's talking about leaving and shit and going back. He's walking back to LA, so pissed off about his dog. Seth Green's like, "Dude, come on, you can't leave." And this is where he actually gets a little rough and tough with Seth Green. And like, he does this thing where like, he gets super pissed off and he turns around and he grabs Seth Green by the shirt, both hands, spins him right back, pins him up against the wall, pulls the blade out on him. And I was like,
"See, I figured it'd be me who would get in a drive-by shooting, but my dog, my fucking dog would be okay."
That is finally the first time you've convinced me that you are like a toughie. Yeah, exactly. I was like, where was that this entire time, man? Open your mouth, but kudos for bringing it out. I'll show you just how crazy I can be. So he leaves. Next morning, you know, they're trying to figure out what's going on. The sheriff pulls up, and this is where we get Papa Howard, right? He plays the sheriff in this thing, Rance Howard. And they're talking to him about the dog, and they show him the dog, and he's like, "I don't know. Could have been this, could have been that, could have been anything. I don't know. You might want to take her down to the vet." And so while they decide to go to the vet, they start to ask about panic, right? And I think right before that too, they asked the sheriff if he wanted food, and he was like, "No, I'm good. But by the way, have you seen so-and-so? He's a local that never came home last night." So I think they were talking about Clint Howard, but I also got the impression that he lived there. So I don't know that that was him or not. Maybe they were just talking about some other rando person.
Yeah, they probably were referring to Clint Howard, but to be honest, it didn't feel like it was just a conversation. It wasn't important to me.
Well, yeah, it's not really like the person I don't think is important, but the fact
it establishes is why he's there, though.
Also that now people have gone missing, right? So we saw Clint Howard get attacked by these ticks. The dog got ate up, and now actual people have gone missing. Right. So it's starting to get a little bit crazier. And then this is when we find out that Panic took off on his own, and the counselors get all pissed. So, you know, Peter Scolari's character is like, "Okay, look, I'm going to go look for him. I want you to come with me." His daughter's like, "I'll go." And he's like, "Fuck no, you stay." And I was like, man, he must really not like his daughter.
No, I think he was just trying to be like, "No, woman, you stay at the home where it's safe. Don't go out into the woods where it's not safe." Like,
yeah.
Like, I would do the same thing to protect someone that I loved.
I thought it was maybe that he wanted her to get, like, bond with, like, his side chick. You know what I mean?
Maybe that too.
Or maybe we're just looking into it too much. But they leave. Peter Scolari's character and Seth Green take off, and they're having kind of like this bonding moment. And there was a small part of me where he's like, what is his name? Fucking Peter Scolari's character in this thing. Because I don't want to keep calling him by his name. Charles. Chuck. That's right. They call him Chuck. So Chuck is talking to him, and he's like, "Hey, I noticed you've been kind of weird the whole time we're up here. You know, you seem uneasy. Like, what up?" And this is where Seth Green admits to him that when he was 8, his dad took him camping and just like left. And he left him in the woods for a couple of days. And I was like, that seems to be on par with this dude, given what I know about him from those 10 seconds where he was like, "Get out of my truck, boy.
Go learn to be a man out in the woods."
Seriously. So you were saying that Seth Green had rolled up and he was like hugging this basketball pole. Well, this is where he's telling Chuck that when he was left in the woods, he didn't know what else to do. So he just held on to a tree for a couple days. And that's what made him feel better. So it made sense. I didn't catch it in the beginning until you pointed it out, but it makes sense. Goes around.
Yeah, I didn't pick up the other part either. There was the part where they're in the woods, though. He finds a tick on homegirl's back, and he explains that he gets like this weird premonition feeling when something bad is about to happen.
The scientific term for that is a spidey sense.
Ah, good.
It's a spidey sense.
I thought it was sixth sense. No, that's just seeing dead people.
So they're out and about, and he's like, you know, Chuck is like trying to get to know him, trying to like layer in the counseling or whatever. And there was a small part of me, because Seth Green's name is Tyler, which is not too far off from Timmy. And I wanted Chuck to just lean over and be like, Tyler, you like movies about gladiators?
You ever watch Greco-Roman wrestling?
Yeah. You ever seen a grown man naked?
Airplane.
Yeah, that moment had that vibe to it, dude. I was like, come on, please. But anyways, so they're on their way to the vet, because the sheriff was like, take it to the vet. They're on their way to the vet whilst also trying to look for Carlton. And they make it to the vet, and the vet's taking a look at the thing.
Certainly not a snake.
Dog's dead. They cut into the stomach. There's something in it. And this is where we get like our real first kind of like good close up shot of what this thing actually looks like, right? So she cuts open the dog's stomach, and or at least she's trying to.
There's no blood inside the dog. The dog has been sucked dry.
Is that what it was? I don't remember.
Yeah. She explains like, because she tries to take like a blood like test from the dog, and there's nothing coming out of the syringe. And then she goes for like this mass that's underneath the breastplate. And that's when she's like getting something out, but then it's like pulling the syringe back.
That's right.
Like fighting it.
And then it starts to leak out. And again, it's not that blood. It's that, well, I mean, it's kind of red because there's red, but it's that same kind of oozy shit that came out of the egg sac. In the cabin, and when she finally is able to fucking pull the syringe back out, she pulls it out, but attached to it is this big ass fucking tick, probably like the size of like my fist, if not a little bit bigger. Yeah, that thing's fucking huge, dude. So she freaks out, falls on the floor with the syringe stuck in it.
And it starts off running.
Yeah, it totally does, dude. It was so good. And so they're scrambling around the vet's office trying to find it. And the thing's like, you know, just kind of making its way around the office. It's like jumping around. And eventually it jumps on and it latches itself onto Seth Green's face. Like it's got it stuck like by his lip. So they're all scrambling trying to get it. And then this is where there's a little bit of inconsistency in the continuity, right? Because in the beginning, as you mentioned, the dog had a small tick on it. Seth Green took it off and was like, you got to burn them because they're too tough. Mm-hmm. So if they're that small and that tough and you got to burn it, you would imagine that this big motherfucker, you got to like, you know.
When in doubt, squish.
I thought about that too. And maybe it's because the tick is so tiny. You just can't get that type of pressure in between your fingernails to like pop it. But like, yeah, as soon as they step on it, it squirts like, and it's done.
Yeah. And
did you notice what the doctor, the veterinarian was carrying around when they were trying to like hunt the tick?
No.
She's got a freaking one of those skimmers you have for the fish tank. Like she's going to get him with the net.
Dude. Okay. All right. So
the little tiny one.
Hold on. So tell me why this scene reminded me of Grabbers, right? Because there's that scene where, you know, the doctor grabs the chair. The female cop grabs a knife, and then O'Shea grabs the magazine. Right. And then they stomp the shit out of that thing. And the doctor's like, oh, man, this was going to be the scientific breakthrough of our age. But oh, it's still moving. And then they like go to stomp it out again. So when she stomped it here, I was like, oh, kind of the same thing.
Absolutely.
But now that you mentioned the fishnet, I'm like, maybe that's like the rolled up magazine version of like.
But she was the only one who went in armed. Everybody else was
That's so funny, dude. That's so funny. So they cut that bitch open and they're taking a look at it. And it's all fucking kinds of gross on the inside.
What is it?
Ixodes Damini. Judging from the mandibles and the pseudo head, a wood tick.
Ticks do not get this big.
It's a tick. Severely altered, but a tick all the same.
What happened to it?
Specimen has been covered with something. Possibly an herbal steroid.
Steroid?
It's illegal, but some of the farmers up here use it on their marijuana fields to accelerate growth. But that's between us, understand? Well, this tick has undergone a radical modification. From your description of the dog's behavior, this may have even strengthened the tick's neurotoxin.
An anesthetic?
Precisely. When a tick bites, it numbs you, so you don't feel it. Now, in some cases, it can produce a hallucinatory state. Your dog may have been hallucinating, like he was on an LSD trip or something.
What if there are more of these out there?
And then we cut back to Carlton, who's in the woods. And he, you get the impression he spent the night in the woods and, you know, he's trying to, like, get out.
Yeah, he was, like, all shivering cold and shit.
Well, as he's walking through the woods, this is where we find out that, like, he's got something that's, like, in his leg. And you see the bulge through the parachute pants, and not the right kind of bulge that you would expect from a black man in his pants, right?
What type of bulge would that be?
More snake-ish, long snake-ish, you know?
Alabama black snake.
Oh, man.
Not his Plaxico Burris piece in his sweatpants pocket.
So he finally starts like punching at it and he's like trying to figure it out and he ends up cutting his pants open and you see this big ass fucking tick just burrowed into like his knee or like his shin or just somewhere in like lower leg and he's screaming at the top of his lungs, literally like ripping this thing off of his leg. And when
panic.
Yeah, exactly. But he don't though. But he don't.
No.
And so, you know, he goes to hold it and this thing is fucking huge and it's spurting out all kinds of blood. And then they cut away and I was like, no, I want to see more of that shit. Cause it's pretty gnarly where like his like leg is opened up and it's just all this blood's coming out. But, Holly comes up to the rest of the kids that are just kind of lying around the camp. And, she convinces them to go. She convinces the girl, the daughter, and this other girl, I don't know her name. I forgot she was even here. We didn't even mention her. Fuck, dude. What was her name?
Kelly Mishimoto. She's like the Asian chick who's like cooking and everything.
Yeah.
But when homegirl walks over to wake up Rome, who's like sunbathing, showing off his glistening body and shit. Do you remember what he says?
No.
She like wakes him up and he's like, imagine.
Hey, suck my... What?
Oh, sorry. No. Hey, Holly.
Hi. How would you like to go fishing with Melissa and Kelly?
I was like, that's how you wake up.
That's funny. So she convinces the two girls to go fishing. And then Dee Dee and Rome like decide to go on a hike, right? So you know what happens when people start splitting up in horror movies, right? They don't get good.
My favorite parts.
All the good parts start to come out. So the two girls are fishing, the other two are hiking, and then Holly's back to camp by herself. And as the girls are fishing, they actually catch something, or at least they think they do, right? And so they're walking into the water, they're fucking trying to reel this thing in, and they're like, holy shit, dude, like, what is this thing? And all this music is building up tension and everything. And as soon as they pull it up, what do they catch?
Help me. Is it one of those big ass ticks?
Nope.
Oh, was it the cop?
Yeah, it was the sheriff.
What happened to the sheriff?
I don't know. He was just there. You know what I mean? Like, and then his car's all hidden in the bushes. Like, what happened? So here's the thing. At first, I was like, maybe that's who the sheriff was looking for.
Hmm.
But then they said, oh my God, it's the sheriff. And I was like, oh shit, if it's the sheriff, then that's Rance Howard. That's So yeah, I don't know. And that's all in a matter of like an hour, 2 hours. But he looked like he'd been there in that water for a while. So
yeah. Well, it looked like he'd been in there for a while, but actually he just looked like really pale. Like he didn't have any blood inside of him.
That's
like
true.
The ticks had sucked him dry.
Get to the last drop. Okay, so while the girls are deciding whether to keep their catch or throw it back, Dee Dee ends up walking into Clint Howard's grow shed. And she's noticing some weird shit on the wall. And so it's this cool scene of like her walking over towards it, building that tension. And it's just a fucking wall of all these like fat sacks where all these ticks are growing.
It's like walking into that alien like bed of just a...
Anyways, what I thought was kind of cool, they did a cool little effect here. So they show Dee Dee walking up to one of the sacks and she's like touching it. And then they show it from inside the sack. So you can tell like they put like a kind of like, you know,
filter over the lens,
or they used to put like Vaseline on the lens, yeah. Shit like that. And they show these little like legs on the inside. So you can kind of get the impression that you're looking from the inside out. And before anything could happen with it, fucking Clint Howard shows up and he's like, you know, begging her to like help him. Right. And at this point, his face is all like fucked up. And
he's like,
oh, dude, he looked, I would say, gross.
So gross.
Yeah.
I listened to this interview that Amy Doentz, the actress who played Dee Dee, and she explained, like, in the interview, they asked, what was it like working with Clint Howard? And she explained, the only interaction they had was that scene right there.
Oh, no way.
Where like, he's like hot and drooly and just all slobbering all over her, and she's like, I mean, he seemed like a great guy.
Only the nicest of guys slobber all over you.
That's right. In the most delicate of manners.
Yeah, true, true.
He used a tic-tac first.
So there's this cool scene where him like over her, like they fall onto each other and he's on top of her. And like, he's got this growth on the side of his face that's just pulsating, right? And like, his lips are a little like torn up. He looks fucking gnarly, dude.
But it reminds me of that, like, one of those stories from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, when like, there is the spider that burrows under your skin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
and then eventually the
totally.
Eggs.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
So at this point, he's gone from asking her to help him to asking her to kill him. And he's trying to hand over his pistol, but she won't do it. And then eventually, it becomes too late because this fucking thing on the side of his face just explodes.
Yeah. Burst.
So his fucking face explodes, right? And he falls over to the ground. And this is where he goes to, like, just say, fuck it. And, like, he goes to, like, get ready to shoot himself. And then he just dies. And I think at one point he stepped into a second bear trap, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
Which I thought was hilarious.
I missed that.
Or he's walking around with a bear trap on his leg, but
I think that's what it was. I think he was still walking with it on his leg because he never was able to like trigger it to get off when earlier he stepped in it.
Okay. So from there, Dee Dee like runs out of the place and then he goes to kill himself. It doesn't happen. He just ends up dying.
Yeah. You never get to hear, like, I thought you'd hear the final gunshot in the next scene, and you don't.
Yeah, and what we do see is Carlton like waking up, you know, still figuring out that his leg is all fucked, and then him trying to like, I don't know, it was weird because he wakes up and he realizes his leg is all fucked up, but then it cuts to a scene where he's in like this cabin or whatever around like a barrel fire, and then Sir and Jerry are there. And then it cuts out to another scene where they're kicking his ass, like they're beating the shit out of Carlton in the woods.
I got the impression like he was trying to find some comfort and some shelter and someplace he shouldn't have been. And Jerry and Sir were looking forward to having some company unannounced. What do we
have here? Bring out the gimp.
That's exactly what I was thinking. A young entrepreneur.
Well, as they're trying to figure out what to do with them in the woods, Carlton busts out his knife and he stabs, I think, Jerry, like right in the fucking kneecap. And I was like, dude, that reminds me of 24 when Jack Bauer used to shoot people in their kneecaps.
Oh, that was a great show.
And I'd watch it and be like, oh, I bet that hurts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, but they were very clearly trying to take advantage of this panic in middle of the woods.
Like, yeah.
They even, yeah, they said some pretty derogatory things leading up to it. Like, you're the one who's gay.
Oh, yeah. They, like, made him call him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
So Carlton gives chase, and it's so fucking funny, man, because Jerry catches up with them and they start fighting again, and he ends up like getting away from Jerry again. I think he actually like beat the shit out of Jerry, so he starts running, and then Sir comes around the corner with a big ass fucking shotgun.
Boom.
And just shoots him. And this is where he falls over and dies weird, and I'm like, who was it that told us that men die weird on film?
Come on. You know who that was. That was Dean Kirkright.
Was it Dean? All right.
It was absolutely Dean, because I pay attention to that shit like hardcore now.
So it did remind me of that, right? And I was like, he did die weird, dude. What the fuck? Well, actually, he's not dead, right? He's not dead.
Well, just before that, he was like, I'm in a desperate situation. So he started pounding all those pills that he jacked out of Rome's bag earlier.
The man purse?
Yeah.
Well, I think what made the problem even worse is that when what's his name shot at him, I think that started a fire in some of the woods there. So now you've got this big ass fucking forest fire that's just starting, and you've got Carlton who's like literally laying on the side of a hill, dying in the most weirdest way possible. And then he does remember that he has that bag of steroids. And he busts that out and he starts eating those things like fucking Skittles.
That's right. I mean, if you're going to go out, you might as well go out jacked. You want to look good in the coffin like Sylvester Stallone. Like, looking at Sylvester Stallone today in comparison to like Rambo 1, like no comparison.
Oh my God. Horrible.
But if I had the money,
I'd pay extra to not look like him. The very next scene after we see that the forest fire is ablaze, we see Rome carrying Dee Dee like away from wherever they were.
Right.
And when Dee Dee comes to, right? So now she's the third person to come to, right? Because Clint Howard was out, yep, and then came to. Then Carlton was out, Carlton, and then came to. And now she was out and came to. And as she's being carried by Rome, all she sees is Clint Howard's face. So she's hallucinating.
Yep, which is what the doctor said is part of the side effects of the neurotoxins released by the ticks.
So that's what was happening with Carlton. He was hallucinating as well. Trips. He thought he was in this weird scenario where they're, you know, trying to do something strange and funny with them in this shed. It turns out he was just on the floor getting the shit kicked out of him.
I've been there.
Gotta take your lumps, bro. Or did blood you mean the hallucination part?
Oh, all of the above.
Sometimes in the same night, dude.
Yeah, it's happened, unfortunately.
Do you remember that time we went to see Muse and Rage Against the Machine?
Yeah, I didn't quite make it.
Yeah, that sucked. So Rome's trying to like help Dee Dee figure all this shit out, but she's fucking panicking. The van shows back up from the veterinary's office. They all get in the car and they take off. You know, everyone's trying to like calm down. And then we see that this fire is just like full send, dude. Like
it's doing what it does up in those mountains.
It's just going, dude. And we see like rats on a sinking ship, all these fucking ticks just running out of the forest and running into on top of the cabin where everybody is staying.
Yeah, this is the point of the movie where I started to get itchy.
Itchy.
Yeah, I just, you know, like, you see all these things crawling around. Next thing I know, I'm like, fuck, I got an itch. Oh, I got another itch. And your itch spreads.
You've just read my mind.
Almost like arachnophobia.
Yeah.
I got like that with that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arachnophobia is different, though. Arachnophobia makes that little tiny, like, daddy long legs in the corner of the bathroom suddenly, like, deadly.
Dude, I will tell you, for a long time after that movie, I was hyper careful about putting my shoes on. Because there's scene where,
I remember.
Oh, fuck. Anyways, so now they're all barricaded in the cabin. And they're watching all the ticks kind of running around. And just as they're, like, you know, looking out the window to see what's happening, Jerry and Sir show up. But they did. Jerry shows up and, like, pops in front of the window, and he's got this fucking tick that's, like, all around his mouth, almost like a face hugger from Alien, right? Just, like, all up in his grill. And they're debating on whether or not they should let him in, but they do. And as soon as they come in, they start stomping on ticks, man. There's a couple of them that came in with them. And Jerry's still got this one that just keeps crawling up his face, man. And he finally is able to pull that shit off. And he just gets to stomping on them like the rest of them.
Again, don't fucking let people in. Like, once you're settled, let them stay outside. Like, and that was very much like Alien, actually. Like, someone's got a clear face hugger on their face trying to get inside the safe zone.
Yeah. Now, I will say this is one of those cool moments where, like, everybody was broken apart and now they're all back together with the exception of Carlton. Well, eventually, Carlton makes his way back to the cabin and he's trying to get in and he's arguing with them, like, let me in, let me in. And everybody's like, no, don't let him in. Like, to your point, don't let people in. Mm-mm. But it's panic, dude. It's Carlton. What are you going to do? Answer. Even when Sir is, like, kind of pretend threatening them with his, like, hairbrush knife or whatever, he turned his back for a second and Seth Green fucking runs, opens the door, and lets him in. And when he does that, all these ticks run in too. But as soon as Carlton gets in, he's, like, laying on the ground. He's starting to convulse. They're trying to take care of him. They see that he's got this big-ass fucking tick attached to him. And he busts out the bag of steroids. And I think at this point, Rome's, like, kind of looks at him like, ah, that's where those went, you know?
Yeah, I've been looking for that.
But they're trying to figure out how to get this fucking thing off of him. They're trying to hold him down. He's going super crazy. And Seth Green is like, oh, it's a tick. You got to burn him. So he busts out his lighter, lights it on fire, and the thing fucking explodes everywhere, dude.
Like, immediately.
Yeah, so cool. It didn't take a lot of fire, you know? And it's a small flame because it's a fucking lighter.
Well, some of those crack torches, but this wasn't one of those.
No, man, those fucking things, dude. Try to light a cigarette and you end up burning off all your fucking eyebrows.
Like the barbecue next door.
Now that's a fire.
That's right.
So everybody in the cabin is starting to argue about what they should do next and what's happening. And this is where things start to get crazy. And fucking Jerry starts to, like, chokehold Rome. And Sir's trying to... No, it wasn't Sir. It was Peter Scolari's character. Man, I never remember. Chuck tries to, like, make it to the door.
Run for the door.
Yeah, and then Sir shoots him with a shotgun in the leg. And that's where she's like, I'll get the first aid kit.
Come on. Yeah, and then, like you said, Jerry's roughing up Rome, and they're just kind of establishing they're the guys who are in charge.
They're basically taking over now because they didn't like what was happening, and they're like, okay, we're going to run this shit. And then Jerry's, like, still on the daughter. What was her name?
Kelly? Melissa?
Kelly?
Virginia.
Not Kelly. Virginia. Melissa. Yeah, Melissa. Yeah. And so now they're trying to figure out an escape route. They go to open the door to, like, get out. And immediately they're being attacked by ticks. Sorry.
Jerry gets to the van, gets inside there, and, like you said, gets all beaten up. Starts doing that hallucination shit.
That's what it was. Yep.
So he's looking over at Sir. Thinking, like, Sir's gonna attack him, just runs right into him with the truck, yeah. Like the van.
Which doesn't make things better, because now you have this big ass hole in the cabin for all these fucking ticks to come through.
But it brings the van closer to you.
That's true.
So, load up. Let's A-team this bitch. I get to be Hannibal.
That's cool. I always wanted to be BA.
Yeah, everybody does.
Okay, so they're all trying to get into the van. They're all trying to fight all the ticks off. It's a pretty cool scene, right? Everyone's kind of going a little batshit crazy in there. They're all trying to figure out what to do.
There's a lot of creatures, like remote controls, it looks like, going all over the place. This is where they spent the money.
Oh, yeah. This was awesome. And it's funny because I think I read something where, like, this stuff, like, they shot this stuff first, and then they, like, worked the story backwards from it, almost like reverse engineering it, just kind of make it all fit. So I think
started,
like,
at the fire.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, they started at the fire. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because that was the most expensive part to pull off. Like, you're going to have fire, so let's make sure we get that nailed down before we even broach the rest. Or if it's because there was an actual fire going on at the time, which is not abnormal for this part of Southern California.
Yeah, true that. Shit. Tell my homeowner's insurance about it. Okay.
Sponsored by...
I know, right? So... while they're all trying to figure out how the fuck they're going to get out of there, they had covered Carlton's body, but then they notice that it's starting to convulse again. And then the body starts to move by itself, and it's like scooting over towards the wall and then comes up the wall a little bit, almost like in Nightmare on Elm Street, right, where they fucking drag Tina up and around the walls and the...
yeah, it looks like the room's about to start spinning.
Yeah. And what we see is that they kind of pan, like, on top of Carlton, and you see, like, a lot of all, like, the prosthetics on him and shit, so you know it's about to get a little weird.
Body horror, baby.
Dude, this is where it gets fucking dope. Now, out of his legs come these long fucking, like, mandibles or whatever. And then out of the palms of his hands are starting to come out that way, too. So what you can see is this big-ass fucking tick is breaking itself out from the inside out through Carlton.
Fucking Franz Kafka metamorphosis live.
Dude, it's such a great fucking scene. And it does this thing where, like, it splits his head open and, like, really just kind of shows you that the body's just coming apart. And then you get, like, this big-ass, like, master tick that comes out of it. I love shit like that, dude.
That was the money shot for sure, this entire spot.
Yeah.
It reminded me of The Fly. It reminded me, like I said... I don't know if you ever read that Franz Kafka like shit with metamorphosis, no, where the dude like turns into a beetle, but yeah, dope. Really well done.
So the first thing it does when it breaks out of the body is it goes and attacks Sir and just starts sucking the shit out of his head. And then the team starts to like swing out of the house on a tire swing, like in straight Goonie style, right? Just like, right, let's get the fuck out of here. Seth Green gets through it first, but obviously, you know, when he lands on the floor, there's a bunch of fucking ticks that are coming after him. So he makes like a little like torch out of one of those straw brooms. And he's fighting all the ticks off. Gets to the van. I think the goal is to get the van over to get everybody else. Everybody else is trying to break out of the house at the same time. They start like climbing down the window, like they're doing what they can. And I think Rome's like one of the last ones to get out. But at the same time, the big ass fucking tick has made its way up and is attacking Rome. And Seth Green is trying to help Rome get out of there. Eventually, he's using the broom. What would you call it? The broom.
The whisk of the broom?
Yeah, I guess. The broom torch? Yeah. He takes the broom torch and he like shoves it into the tick. And then like it just gets stuck in it and it blows up, right? Which again, we've already established it doesn't take a lot of fire to kill these things. And they explode when they're on fire.
That's right.
And what happens is when it explodes, some of the fire stuff gets everywhere and there's like a trail of fire that leads to the big ass propane tank. And that shit explodes and all of that shit is fucking blown up, and then the gang is getting away in the van. Seth Green is driving. There's blood all over the place. They're all holding each other like, oh my God, are you still alive? Are you okay? Whatever. And then it fades to like sunrise over LA. The city. Yeah. And it reminded me of like the Troma intro a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, where you see like the cityscape and it's like dusk a little bit.
It's like a video game almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm right there with you. I was trying to put my finger on what it looked like.
So it's next day. We're back in the city. And we start to kind of hover over and around this like junkyard, right? A bunch of cars just parked everywhere.
Sweet cars in there too.
And you see the van parked in there. And it's empty and there's nobody in there. You get the impression that like they just want to get rid of this fucking thing. And they pan below it. And you start to see it leak oil, or at least that's what it's supposed to look like. And then you notice it's a little bit thicker. And then there's more droppings. And then you get this fat sack that falls from the bottom of the car. Roll credits.
It's still out there. God, now I'm itchy again.
So are the grabbers. You know what I mean? I was just doing some promo stuff on Instagram with that shit. And I was like, oh yeah, I forget. In the end, there's all those eggs on the beach or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Movies still kind of do that today, which is like, I don't want to shut myself off from not being able to do a sequel or finding a weird way to like integrate a sequel.
Absolutely.
If I can leave it open-ended a little bit and give myself like that foot in the door where I can come back and do some more, why not?
I also look at it, not even for the hope of a sequel, but it just leaves that uneasiness to the audience. This isn't resolved. Damn it. They're still out there.
True.
It's like the unsolved mysteries. What made that so creepy? The fact that they're still unsolved? Fucking unsolved.
Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was fun.
It was.
Yeah, nothing too serious.
Yeah, I had a good time with it. It was really, really fun to go ahead and see Clint Howard. I swear I haven't seen him in anything in a while. So
Raymond met him at CreepyCon a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw the video. I'll have to get it from Raymond and I'll send it to you. But Raymond asked him, hey, can you act out a scene with me from Little Nicky? And he fucking did it, dude.
What a great guy.
I do. It was funny. I'll get the clip and I'll send it to you, dude. It was good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, man. Well, cool, bro. I guess we'll do it again next week.
Yeah. I'm excited. Out.
I don't know how long Matt's going to be exploring the unknown, but I know he's got a list. We've got one ready to go of his, but I don't feel right doing his stuff without him. So we'll have to figure out some other stuff. Depending on whether or not he's back or not. So,
absolutely.
Cool.
Till then.
All right, brother.
Keep watching some weird shit.
See you next time. Follow us on Instagram at Mutant City Horror. You can email the show, mutantcityhorror@gmail.com. Or you can get me direct, paul@mutantcityhorror.com. Yeah, that's it. We'll see you on the next one. Peace.
Late.